following program is rated BBMALSA. It contains strong language, sexual situations, awesomeness, and nudity. It is intended only for mature audiences. Listener indiscretions are advised.
Welcome to our Bliss Bringers podcast. The materials we cover encourage adults of all ages, nationalities, and sexualities to open up and embrace their wildest desires and blissful pleasures. You won't find medical advice here, just our personal experiences following the journey of sexual evolution and education in sizzling fun topics that were definitely not taught to us in school, but have wickedly blossomed into reality. We discuss adventures in ethical non-monogamy, kinks and fetishes, exotic places to visit, sexy events, workshops, and tips. Allow us to seduce you into embarking on new adventures where each day you ask yourself, what's your pleasure?
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Bliss Bringers podcast, episode 7. It's May 19th, and I'm Professor T. And today, the captain and I are going to be interviewing Julie from the Swingers Board and author of the Swinger Manual. Just John and Mistress Cindy are in flight at the moment. Maybe they're joining the Mile High Club as we speak. So it's just me and my wonderful partner,
Captain.
Before we talk to Julie, let's do a quick personal update. We don't have a lot to report today, but we're pretty excited because in less than a week, just John and Mistress Cindy are coming for a visit, and we're going to tape a show while they're here with the four of us all in the same room. And we're going to be interviewing Jana, who is the owner of the Oasis Aqua Lounge in Toronto. So you can look for some exciting stuff in an upcoming show. Now on to our main topic. Today we have with us Julie from the Swingers Board. And Julie is known to many as Just Ask Julie. She's the founder of and brains behind the wonderful resource that is the Swingers Board. It's at www.swingersboard.com. And it's now just celebrating its 15th anniversary. She's also the author of the Swinger Manual, which is a must read for anyone who's considering to enter the lifestyle or who's already in the swinger lifestyle. She's got tons of good experience to share. Julie gives talks and workshops at swinger events and shows. And we're really fortunate to have her with us today. So welcome, Julie.
Thank you for having me.
It's so great to have you on the show. Thanks for taking the time. And congratulations on your 15-year anniversary of the Swinger Board.
Well, thank you. Time has just kind of flown by us. It's like a lifetime in internet years, so yeah.
For sure. I mean, the shape of the online world has changed so much in the past 15 years, so having the staying power of that board, that's truly remarkable. Let's start with some questions maybe just about you and how would you describe yourself, your sexual identity? Who are you?
I'm a bisexual, married, female, swinger, late 30s, mid 30s, somewhere in there, redhead.
No kidding. And you're a redhead.
You know what they say.
I do.
Yeah. So, Julie, are you comfortable with telling us what your day job is? And are you out there in your day-to-day life?
Well, running the Swingers Board pretty much is my job. It's my life. Luckily, my husband has a really good job that makes a really good income, because the money on the internet's not really there. As far as beyond that, I'm going to school and trying to finish a degree in psychology, and I do a lot of volunteer work. I'm not 100% out. Like, I don't just walk up to people and go, hey, I'm a swinger, or hey, I'm bisexual or whatever. But for the people that I'm close enough to that I would actually talk about my sex life, most of them know. It's not something that, that I'll try really hard to hide or anything like that. And even, our swinger profiles, they have our faces on them. If one of our friends from the vanilla world happened upon our profile, they'd know it was us. And it happens that, we end up with friends coming out to us because they found our profile. It makes life a lot easier when more people know.
Can you tell us a little bit about your website, the Swinger Board?
It's pretty much just a swinger community. Most of your sites out there, your SLS and things, they focus on the personal ads and the dating side of things. And the Swingers Board is really more about the information side. The bulk of the site is forums. And so, anybody can come in there and ask a question or give advice or just share their latest experience or hoorah moment or whatever. And it's great because you get, a lot of different opinions on things rather than just one person having, everything to say. And then, beyond that, we have the club listings, and we, have the reviews area where people can come in and actually share their experience with a club rather than it just being, you know, listings. Because that's one thing that people always want when they're looking for a club to go to. They want to know what to expect when they get there. And unless you know somebody who's gone, that's really hard to find out a lot of times. So, I mean, that's the bulk of it. We don't do the personal ads, like I said. Other than that, we have stories. We have some awesome, hot swinger stories that, you know, people have shared over the years. It's always a good way to get yourself ready for the weekend as you're heading towards it.
And do you do it on your own? You mentioned that it is your day job, but do you have a team of people working on it, or are you on your own with it?
I definitely couldn't do it by myself. I've got some really awesome, you know, members on the site who have, over the years, you know, volunteered to help with different aspects. And so we've got a great team of moderators that keep things chugging along. And they're the ones who step in and say, hey, we want to do, you know, a moderated chat and, you know, get people in there in the chat room talking about certain topics, which has been really great. So we do that twice a week. And, you know, and then the moderators are there just to keep the forums moving smooth and ensure that any rare spammer that gets through the doors doesn't stay long, right. Things like that. So they're really great because there's no way I could have the time to read every single post that comes in on there.
Are there ever circumstances where the moderators have to delete or not post certain comments?
It's very rare. I've always taken a standpoint of being against censorship.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, if it's spam or something, that's the one thing that we don't tolerate at all. Beyond that, the few times that something might ever get edited, you know, if somebody posted a phone number, we'd edit it. If
right.
somebody came in and was attacking another member, they would, you know, get a warning or an infraction, and then that post would, sometimes it gets edited, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's good to leave it as kind of a reminder of why you don't do things.
Right.
But no, for the most part, we leave everything intact. The only other thing we don't allow is politics. I learned the hard way that politics and swinging are not good bedfellows.
You said you started this in your early 20s?
I was like 21 or 22. I think I was 21 when I started it.
And is it true? I was listening to another interview that you did recently, and you said that you weren't even a swinger when you started.
It was right around the same time. Like, I don't think we had completely jumped in. The idea had been introduced to us, obviously. And my ex-husband, who I was with at the time, he had had some experience before he and I got together and had some friends that were still involved. So the topic was there, but we weren't like active or anything in it. I hadn't, you know, really embraced it as something that we were really comfortable with.
Were you both equally young?
No, he was a little bit older than me.
Uh-huh.
So he was like 8 years older than me. So he had, you know, he had a little bit more experience with things like that. And I was always very open to non-monogamy
right.
in general. It just wasn't something that worked well with my brain chemistry, I guess, when I was young. But at the same time, you know, being raised in an environment where that's what you did, it just, I looked at it as like, oh, you know, I get married and then you don't do these things anymore once you're married. You know, that all, it's just 100% you and that person and nothing else. You know, I had friends who did the open relationship or whatever, and I looked and they were married, and I would look at them and be like, that's just wrong. But it was fine for me to, you know, cheat on a boyfriend or something. Makes no sense.
Right.
No, but also if you're in your early 20s, you're still figuring it out.
Yeah,
to a large degree.
I think we're all still figuring it out.
Yeah,
but are.
About the cheating, I think we get a little clearer as hopefully
yes.
as we get older.
I know. I've definitely gotten a lot clearer on it as I've gotten older, and a lot of it too, I think, is being in the right relationship where you feel like you're being fulfilled in the relationship, so that you don't really have any need to cheat necessarily.
Exactly, right. And that you can communicate and be honest too.
Right. And that, you know, one of the things that I've said a lot of times on the board is that cheating is, it's not about sex.
No.
Typically when somebody cheats, it's about something's missing in that relationship.
Right.
So, you know, if you're in a relationship where there's nothing missing and the person you're with gives you the freedom to be who you are and you have that communication where you can tell each other everything and be open and honest, then you shouldn't have any need to cheat, which begs the question of why it still happens so often in swinging couples. But
yeah.
Couples are perfect, you know.
No, I guess.
Yeah, but then I guess it all depends on what their relationship is like, right?
Right. And that's just it. Just because they're a swinger couple doesn't mean they have a great relationship.
Exactly.
Or they have communication down or, you know, any of those things. There's still so much room for error and possibilities if you don't focus 100% on that communication all the time. And
mm-hmm.
you constantly have to work on it.
For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And I don't know about yourself, but we certainly can notice when we're at a lifestyle resort or event, you can tell which couples are solid. And I mean, most our experience is that most of them are very solid. And that's, we like that kind of experience. But we've come across, you know, the odd couple where we thought, this isn't right, you know?
Yeah.
Just didn't feel right.
Yeah, and as long as you trust your gut, I think you can avoid a lot of those people.
Yeah, exactly. T and I are very, we have a big desire of being out there and not having false identities because we have to hide it. So what made you want to do this? Is that part of it?
Do the website?
Yeah,
and yeah, things like that?
Do the website, yeah.
No, I think when I was 21, I really didn't care what anybody thought.
Right.
I probably care a little bit more now than I do then, and more so now because I'm back in the same town as my mother.
That's my biggest fear is that my mother's going to come across the podcast.
It's funny you say that. Years ago, in addition to the Swingers Board, I used to have several other adult-oriented sites, and one of them was an amateur porn site where it was my pictures. And I accidentally one time hit the keystroke to attach my signature line to an email I was sending to my mother. It was not a pretty Christmas. Luckily, we were not here for Christmas.
That's when you really want to be able to bring back an email.
Yes. I can't say that I've ever sent an email I wanted to bring back as much as that one. And it caused a lot of consternation. And, you know, I'll be honest, I was not honest with her about things when, you know, she got it. At the same time, I'm pretty sure she knows that I probably wasn't 100% honest. There's a lot of things about what I do online and things like that we just don't talk about. You know, she knows I work on the internet, and that's about it.
Gotta have boundaries.
We have really good boundaries.
Yeah, healthy ones.
So what did make you want to do start the board?
When I started it, it was, you know, as we had just gotten on the internet, so it was like late 96, early 97, somewhere in there. Back then, it's like you plug the computer in, you hop on AOL, and the first thing you do is you surf for porn. And we start pulling up these porn sites and all these different things. And I'm like, I could do that. I don't have a clue how to do that, but I can figure it out. I can do that. That looks like fun. And so then it was like, and it was more so about like, I could make a website, less than the porn side of things. But then it was like, okay, so what do I make? And the obvious answer was porn. So, you know, I did that. I made some different adult sites. And then somewhere along the way, as we started examining swinging a little bit, like what I found was that back at that time, what swinger sites were out there were set up the same way that the old magazines and contact ads were set up, which was basically if you wanted to place an ad, you had to pay. There was a fee to actually place the ad website.
Right. So like personal ads.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you would have to pay like a membership fee to actually view the ad. Seeing as how everything else on the internet was free, my thought was, well, why can't we do this for free? I had several other adult sites that I was trying to build. And so I was like, well, if I did this thing with these free personal ads for swingers, then, you know, I'd have a place to promote my other stuff. And so I did that, and it didn't really work out very well, the promotion part.
No.
The ads worked really well, and it took a whole lot of time because I was doing everything manually. You know, so people would email me their ad, and I would, you know, have to like copy and paste it into the right section. And
that whole world has evolved, hasn't it?
Yeah, huge change. So, I mean, that's pretty much how it started. And, you know, it never did what I put it out there to do as far as you being able to use it to market my other sites, but it grew and just kind of evolved and changed into its own universe as, you know, different things got added and people were sending me ads right and left because they didn't have any place else to put them. So I would do that. And then I started adding club listings and people would send me stories. So we'd post the stories and it just kind of blossomed, you know, one thing after another we would add over the years. And eventually 2001, 2002, I added the forums, but at around the same time, within a year or so, I'd pulled the personal ads because I had updated them so that they weren't manual anymore. But at the same time, the traffic was growing at a faster rate than my programming skills could keep up with. So I just ended up pulling them and deciding that other sites like SLS were popping up at the time and they were doing it better than I could figure out how to do it.
Right. So let them do that.
Yeah. Let them do that part and I'll do the rest.
Kind of interesting how it evolved over time.
Yeah. It was pretty much just, you know, what people asked for or what, you know, the questions people asked, I would try to answer them the best that I could. And a lot of it was me learning as I went because obviously I didn't know what I was doing when I started it. So
do you still do the porn?
I don't do the amateur stuff anymore. I stopped like in 2002 and I still have a couple of random little porn sites running around that aren't like me, just random stuff that I started years ago that I just haven't pulled and hadn't had any need to.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, no, I pretty much let all of it go and just kept the swingers board because that's kind of where my love, I guess my passion is. So, you know, it's what I still enjoy as opposed to doing the other things that were taking time but weren't necessarily something I enjoyed as much.
What is it because of the sense of community that you enjoy it more, or what? Why do you enjoy it more?
Well, I think part of it is the community and the interaction, but a lot of it is just, I think, swinging. And I guess it's a chicken and egg kind of thing. I'd say, you know, my passion is swinging, so running a swinger site
right.
is where I would focus. But at the same time, so much of my passion for swinging is because of the website. So it's kind of a circular mm-hmm. thing that builds on itself. Even, you know, to this day, I see that, you know, I post more on the site when we're actively involved swinging, you know,
right, of course,
break for a while or pull back for any reason, then I'm not, you know, I don't have that inclination to post as much because it's not on my mind.
Who's your target audience for the site, and what are your goals and hopes for the site right as it stands today?
I'd say the target audience is really anybody who's either is a swinger or is interested in swinging. I've never tried to be one of those sites that was like anti-single males or anti-singles. I try to include them to a point. My attitude on swinging is that it's, you know, it has to involve a couple somewhere right. in there. You know, if it's just a single guy and a single girl having sex, it's not swinging.
That's not swinging.
Yeah. So, you know, right. there has to be a couple involved. But at the same time, I'm not going to sit there and go, well, single males aren't swingers. I think it's more about a mindset than it is about who you are, you know, as your relationship status goes. So, you know, if you're a single guy that, you know, your mindset understands swinging, and I wouldn't say that applies to most singles, male or female. It's more about understanding that it is about the couple. We're seeing a lot more single females now, and they seem to almost be falling into the same patterns that the single males have had of approaching swinging just from a standpoint of I want more sex, or from the single female's point of view, a lot of times it's just I want to be with other girls and I like guys too, so this is the best way to do both. But they don't quite grasp the couple side of things, if that makes sense. For a single to really fit what I would say that they're a swinger, they have to be the same people who, if they were in a relationship, would still be open to it.
Right. So they understand that their role as a single really is to enhance a couple's experience.
Yeah. And I think as a couple, we have to understand that our role for the other couple is to enhance theirs and vice versa. It's just
vice versa. Yeah.
As two couples, you know, or, you know, in a situation like that, then we both get it. So we're both trying to give and get as opposed to anyone being there just to get.
Right. And you're the author of the Swingers Manual. How did you decide what to put in it, and what made you write the manual?
Well, the Swinger Manual is really an offshoot of the Swingers Board. And what it was, you know, over the decade plus of running the swingers board, I would have several people over the years that would make comments like, oh, you should write a book, or, you know, there's so much great information here, it would make a great book. You know, I even had people offer to pull the information and write the book. You know, nothing ever came of it. But after hearing it enough times, I was just finally like, you know, maybe I should at least give it a try. You know, I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen? I write a book and it sucks. You know, so I finally just sat down and did it. You know, I started writing just small portions of it and handing them off to people that I trusted and saying, you know, what do you think? You know, give me your honest feedback. And it kind of just grew from there. It took me a year or so to write it. You know, I just really wanted to take that information that is the swingers board and put it into kind of an easy, comprehensive guide to swinging that, you know, covered all those basic frequently asked questions, the how to, you know, how do I talk to my wife? What does it take to actually be a successful swinger? You know, where should I even start? All the way through to the, okay, we're here now, what do we do? You know, I wanted to cover all of that. And at the same time, because it was gleaned from the swingers board, I didn't want it to be all me sitting there going, oh, well, I'm telling you all this great advice and it's obviously all for me, because it's not. I mean, I've learned as much from the swingers board as anybody, I think, a lot of times. So, you know, I wanted to make sure that I included those quotes and the different opinions of other people. And that's, you know, the great thing about the board is all those different opinions. And
yeah,
the swinger manual to show that too, that it's not all just one way or none.
Yeah, it really does do a good job of reflecting the different experiences and different perspectives. And it's a good guide for someone who wants to learn the rope. So I'm kind of interested to know how you learned to find your way around the lifestyle.
A lot of trial and error. Honestly, I was lucky early on when I started, shortly around the time that I was jumping in or wading in or whatever, was when the book Recreational Sex by Patty Thomas came out. And I found that on the bookshelf at the porn shop that I happened to work at the time. And actually read that one day while I was working. And, I learned a lot from that, and a lot that still carries through. And I still recommend it to anybody, you know, even though it's 15 plus years old at this point, it's still you know,
it's still relevant.
Yeah, it's still very relevant. You know, there's some parts that aren't, that have, you know, some things have changed. Obviously, the book was written well before 90% of, well, probably 100% of the swinger websites that are out there now are out there. You know, so as far as like the how to find people, you know, that's a lot different now. But the general ideas and the general principles of, you know, how to treat people and the communication aspects and who should consider swinging, those things are still very much relevant. So that there was that. And then luckily, the people that we first got involved with, my ex and I, were more experienced and very open to questions and understanding of where I was coming from, being so brand new to it. I remember when they found us on AOL, because back then that's how you found everybody. And they, you know, invited us to come and meet their group. They had this pretty much a local swinger group that would have like house parties on a regular basis. And it was rather intimidating to be invited into, you know, a group that where everybody knew each other, but yeah. We didn't know anybody, you know, and they invited us out just out in a public, you know, vanilla setting to come and play pool with them and meet everybody. And I was so scared just to even do that I wouldn't get out of the car.
Wow. So you've come a long way in this, and you've been doing this for a long time. In your view, has swinging evolved since you've been involved?
Oh, definitely. We actually have a thread going on the board right now on this topic because, you know, the question's coming up of that time period of swinging is kind of dying. Looking back, it's like when I got in, obviously the swinger sites weren't around. We didn't even have that. We were, you know, swinger mags that you can still find them occasionally in your porn shops, but that was pretty much the only way you met with anybody. You pretty much had to go through that route to get anywhere because, or you had to know somebody who was already involved. There was no, you know, central repository for information. So, you know, I mean, that's changed a lot. But even looking at it now, we've seen kind of some shifts over the years as we got into, you know, the years where the swinger websites were like the main thing, everybody going online to do the personal ads. And then lately, the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of complaints on the swinger sites about the fakes and the flakes and people getting on there just to look pretty and see who's on there and, you know, not really there to actually swing. I'm thinking as I'm watching it that we've seen that shift where people aren't using the swinger ad sites as much. And at least in our area, what we saw is more of a socials, people going to the swinger socials, the off-premise things and the clubs to find people. But now I see it even shifting away from that because the same fakes and flakes and people who just want to look pretty are showing up at the socials and the parties. So it makes it hard to even approach people a lot of times there without the worry of, oh no, we don't actually do anything. We're, you know, or we're just here for her to play with another girl. But the guys are even present in the room. They're over in a corner somewhere having a conversation about cameras.
Do you think that's getting more and more common then?
Definitely. Or at least in our area.
People who are just hanging around the clubs for the vibe kind of thing, but they're not, not I mean, they're planning to swing.
At best, you might catch them, you know, having sex in a room with other people having sex. Girls are, you know, doing the girl-girl thing. The girl-girl thing is huge, at least everywhere around here that I've seen. And, you know, I'm all for girl-girl. It's in our profile. We actually have spelled it out of, you know, we're not here just for girl-girl. If that's what you're looking for, then move along, basically.
Right.
It's one thing if you want to limit it to soft swinging or whatever, but we're not going to have this, oh, you can't touch him,
right,
or vice versa. That's just too much stress. You're constantly having to be on your best behavior, and I can't think that much and have sex.
No.
Yeah, right. Neither can we.
But, I mean, that's why soft swap can be so confusing anyway, because the boundary for it is so fluid. For some people, it's this, and for another people, it's that. And
you've answered the question that you and your husband are actively swinging. And so what kind of events do you enjoy best?
My preference would be an on-premise club, but we're 2 hours to the closest one, so we don't get there nearly as often as we like. More common, and what we have available to us locally, is off-premise socials at hotels, which is, you know, it'll do because that's all we got.
Yeah, we're in a similar situation where the nearest on-premise club is a couple hours away. And we also prefer on-premise.
We prefer on-premise is what we would prefer.
It's just a lot easier that way. You don't have to worry about, you can have a room, but you don't have to worry about taking people back there or trying to figure out how to get there even. You can just enjoy the moment while you're in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, the moment can evaporate pretty quickly if you don't act, if you don't seize it right away.
The drive to the hotel could change things.
Well, big time. Yeah. There's too much conversation that can happen.
Yeah. The heat of the moment is what we enjoy.
Yeah. The heat of the moment's good. What about sort of meet and greet type socials?
That's kind of what I would say our thing, what we have available here is really falls more into that. Even, I mean, even though there is a hotel attached and you can go up to a hotel, it feels more like it's just kind of a meet and greet more than anything. And it's not, I mean, the great thing about those types of situations is that you can meet a lot of people.
Do you do a lot of that kind of going out with or getting together with one other couple?
We don't do a lot. It's something that we're kind of looking at again. Like we tried it at one point and we had so many bad experiences with it and that we were like, no, we're not doing that anymore. Sorry, we'll meet you at a club and that's it. And now we're kind of going back to it again, kind of just trying to see if there's a way to do it. And I think that's where we're balancing the, we'll go and have dinner with you one-on-one or drinks with you one-on-one after we've already met you at a social. And there's been times where we've looked at couples and we've thought about meeting them outside of that first, or we have met them first, and it's like, it's just, it's bad.
Mm-hmm. I know.
It's difficult. I mean, the stars have to be aligned. And what are the odds of that when you make a date with another couple and here you're planning to spend the whole evening together and then all of a sudden the stars just aren't aligned?
Well, or the elusive four-way chemistry. I mean, I think it's really harder to find than people think.
It is extremely hard to find.
And so larger groups, sort of you can absorb some of that. It's less stressful, actually, we find in a larger group.
Yeah. I mean, at least if you know, walk up to a couple at a social or you've emailed with them beforehand and you meet them at a meet and greet, if things don't click in that first 30 seconds or you see them and you're like, oh, that's the couple we've been messaging with, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you can walk up, say hi and excuse yourself and go on and meet 50 other couples.
And so can they. Right.
Exactly. Nobody's lost their evening. Nobody's going home going, you know, I can't believe I shaved for this.
Right. So what would you, so you've had lots of experience. What would you say to someone who's new to lifestyle and who's just wanting to get into it?
I would say make sure, first and foremost, that you and your partner are on the same page.
If
you haven't already talked to your partner, then that needs to be the first thing you do. And 90% of the ones that we see come to the board asking questions about how do I, they haven't even brought it up yet.
Oh, so they want advice on how to broach the subject.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's fine if that's what you, you know, I get that that's hard for a lot of people to talk to the person they love about. But at the same time, you've got to be able to talk about it or how can you ever do it? You know, and if you don't have the kind of relationship yet where you can literally talk about anything at any point, where you don't have to be drunk or already in the middle of sex to talk about sex, then you need to get there first. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of steps you can take to get there. And I actually have like a whole chapter in the book just kind of detailing that, of like the different ways of getting your relationship to that point where you can even bring it up. Because, you know, I realize that it's hard for people to say, you know, how do I get started when you haven't can't even bring it up to your partner, haven't brought it up to your partner. You're putting the cart before the horse a little bit. And if you have already brought that up, then, you know, communication is still the number one thing. You know, you still need to be able to talk about everything, and you need to sit down and talk to each other about, you know, where your comfort levels are. What is it you actually want? You know, I see a lot of people who come in and they're like, well, we want to swing. Well, what are you wanting out of swinging? What fantasies do you want to fulfill? What kind of boundaries, you know, where are your comfort levels? And they don't know. They haven't talked about that yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are things that you've got to get out in the open before you jump in. Because one of the worst things that happens is that you jump in early and then you find out where your boundaries were. And they were way tighter than what you thought they were. You see a lot of relationships kind of fall apart over that. And it's sad when it shouldn't have to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mind you, like you said earlier, though, a lot of it is trial and error.
Yeah.
And so there's a bit of a sweet spot that you have to find between communicating some limits up front and also getting yourself out there and seeing how that all feels.
Right. I mean, you can't guess at everything that's going to happen. If you've never been in the situation, you don't know what could come up. But I think, you know, just having those initial boundaries and having an idea of what it is you want out of it, rather than and communicating those to each other, rather than jumping in and having one partner having one idea of what fantasy they want fulfilled and the other partner having a completely different idea of what they want to happen, and then you jump in and oops, you know, our visions don't quite mesh. I don't like it when you kiss her. That's not what I meant. Oh, I just meant that I was going to get to have sex. I didn't think you were going to get to do this too.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
those things need to be ironed out and talked about before you get there.
So once a couple has ironed all that out and sorted out the basic ground rules, how should and then where should they start to get a foot into the lifestyle?
I would say pick your personal dating site, whether it be Swing Lifestyle or I forget. What is the one up there where you guys are at in Canada? That's
well, there's SDC is pretty popular. And then there's one called Cafe Desire that's pretty popular up here.
Yeah. So, I mean, and SDC, Swinger Date Club, is fairly popular here in the U.S. as well. And then Cassidy is on the West Coast, pretty popular. And there's several other small ones. And, you know, for newbies, I always say put yourself out there in as many places as possible. If you're trying to figure out which site's going to work best for you, seeing as, you know, the sites are basically set up such that anybody can go and place an ad for free, go place your ads for free. Put yourself out there and see what you can find in your area based on that site. Look for clubs in your area and groups that you can meet up with and, you know, just try to meet people and try different things and see what works for you. I wouldn't limit yourself.
So just experiment.
Just experiment. And with, you know, there's so many of the swinger sites, try them all, figure out which one's best for your particular area and what you're looking for. You know, if you're looking for a single male, it might be a different site than if you were looking for a couple, or if you're in California, it's going to be different than New York.
Yeah. Well, we found that it took us a while to figure out which site the people in our area were going to. I mean, it's fine to have a popular site, but if the people around you in your geographic region aren't going to that site, then it's not going to help you very much unless you're prepared to travel all the time.
Exactly. And I think that's the key when it comes to picking your swinger site is the people on there. They can have the greatest usability and the greatest interface ever, but if there's nobody on it, it really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things you mentioned is that it enhances your relationship and the other relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be a guide in, you know, what they look at doing, that overall it's going to enhance their relationship.
You mean for newcomers?
For newcomers, yeah.
Yeah.
For newbies.
And I think you have to look at it from that standpoint. If it's not enhancing your relationship, it's breaking it.
Yeah, right.
So if there's any doubt, don't do it, mm-hmm. is in my opinion. You know, there's a lot of couples that, you know, they're like, well, how do we know when we're ready? You're ready when you know you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
If you're still asking that question, in my opinion, you're not there yet because you still have some doubt somewhere in your brain that you're not comfortable with it yet. And to a degree, there's a little bit of sink or swim because there's something to be said for you're never going to know 100% sure that you're ready until you do it.
Right.
You can imagine it all you want, but you're not going to know 100% if there's going to be some little jealousy that's going to pop up or some issue that you haven't thought about until you're in that situation. So you, mm-hmm. you really do pretty much just have to jump in and go with it at some point.
And it's also okay to take a break.
Yes. People think it's either start or stop. There's no mm-hmm. pause. You don't have to jump in and go full bore and that's all you do but you know, if you can kind of take it a little bit slow and steady and make sure you always keep that balance with your relationship, that your relationship is always first and that you always take time for that one-on-one date with each other.
Yes.
And the sex life that you need to have with each other that doesn't involve other people. You know, those things need to come first before you worry about all the rest. But if you're getting to the point where everything's focused on swinging, you probably do need to pull back a little bit, mm-hmm. take a break, refocus on your relationship, and mm-hmm. then maybe give it another try.
Sound advice. When we were corresponding, you mentioned that you're attending the Vegas Exchange Swingers Convention in August, and you're doing a workshop on how not to be a wallflower. Can you tell us a bit about the convention and also maybe give us a little preview of what you're going to be saying in your talk?
The convention's brand new, so I can't give you a whole – I mean, this is their first year doing – I think Swing Lifestyle and a few other sites have kind of gotten together to make this happen, but they're taking over the Palms Hotel in Vegas, which is pretty huge. I mean, it's like, I think like 1500 rooms or something doing the full takeover from like August 7th to the 11th. So it's like a Wednesday to Sunday thing over the date happens to coincide with the International Swinger Day. So it's pretty much, I guess, workshops and seminars during the day, if you like, and then parties in the evening. And it looks like just from the information that I have and, you know, that's available on the website, it's kind of geared more towards an upscale type situation, like the themes. You know, or like they're doing a Bond night one night.
Oh.
Yeah, so that should be kind of interesting, kind of the black tie thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Venetian Carnival, so, you know, masks required.
Right.
And so that'll be kind of sexy
that
and fun.
It does sound like fun.
So can you tell us a little bit more about, your How Not to Be a Wallflower?
The topic came from, there's a section in my book about how to work a social, I think is what I called it. It was an issue. It's been an issue for my husband and I. We're both, believe it or not, introverts. I can talk all day long on the internet, but to like face to face, I have a really hard time approaching people.
I think a lot of people struggle with that.
I do too. And, you know, I mean, there's from the numbers on my site, from a poll that we've done over the years, about 50% of swingers fall into the introvert side of things. But even non-introverts, you know, extroverts still a lot of times have a hard time approaching people just out of the fear of rejection, especially in a situation like this.
Yeah.
You know, you're hoping that something might happen. And so that was where the thought behind the workshop came from. How to get out of your shell so that you're not sitting at a table all night at the parties, you know, or only dancing with your own partner, waiting for somebody else to come and approach you. And that's the problem too many times at the clubs. Everybody's waiting for somebody else.
Yeah, everyone's doing the same thing.
Yeah, and we all feel the same way. So if you can get over that first fact and realize that they're just as scared of coming up to you as you are of going up to them, then, you know, that's step one. And step two is, you know, you can walk up to anybody and just say hello. You don't even have to be into them. Just the fact that somebody approached you doesn't mean that they want to have sex with you. It could just be that they're nice and being friendly.
So you can be that friendly couple.
Yeah. And that's something that my husband and I have worked on a lot. And if you actually met us at a social, you would have no idea that we're introverts because we're usually the ones that are out talking to everybody and roaming the room and meeting people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it sucks. You walk up to a couple and they give you blank stares and you leave their table within 30 seconds. Go, what the hell was that? You know, okay, you obviously didn't want to talk to us. That's cool. We'll go over here and find somebody who does. And, you know, sometimes you meet really awesome people. You know, last night we walked up to a table and started talking to a really hot couple. And they're like, oh, yeah, we emailed you. I'm like, I would seriously remember that. And as they said something else, and I was like, oh, you're that couple that didn't have any pictures, that I basically just ignored your email because you didn't have any pictures. You know, and we ended up having a great time just getting to know them that we would have probably been scared to death to walk up to. But, you know, we take ourselves out of that situation and out of that mindset and put ourselves in a different frame to the point where we don't have to worry about it. We can just, if they don't like us, somebody else will. You know, you're there to meet people. How are you going to meet somebody if you spend the entire night at your table in a corner with your arms crossed? Because not only are you not getting up, but nobody wants to come and talk to you because you look miserable.
Right. This has been great. Yeah. Thank you so much. I wonder if you could just tell us where people can find you online. Well,
swingersboard.com.
Swingersboard.com.
Email you can find me on the site. You can email me at julie@swingersboard.com. The swinger manual is available at swingermanual.com. It's also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and you know, wherever you can buy a book online, I suppose.
And how much is it?
If you order it from swingermanual.com, it is $15 plus shipping. If you order on Amazon, prices vary.
And there's
it's
also
cheaper if you buy it from me.
Okay. And there's also an ebook.
Yeah, the ebook version is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and I think that runs $10.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. This has been great.
So now we're going to move on to our Luscious Lab. Luscious Labs with Professor T. So apparently, people do not tire of reports on the 15-minute orgasm. So today, it's the 15-minute orgasm, take four. All we can say is, wow.
Wow.
It really does get better every time. So for those of you who haven't heard previous reports, the 15-minute orgasm is outlined in Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Body. And he has a chapter on sex and sexuality. And one of the segments is about how to give a woman a 15-minute orgasm. And this is not an orgasm that takes 15 minutes to get. It's an orgasm that lasts for 15 minutes.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's.
See, Julie's interested.
So we were at a conference over the weekend and we decided, okay, well, let's go have a nap. It was in the afternoon and we were going to the banquet that evening. And so we thought, hey, let's try the 15
take
minute,
a time you know, out. We'll practice.
No expectations, no nothing. So we got set up as per the guidelines.
It's hard to explain.
Yeah,
you really
it is.
Need to look
it
at
is.
The book. But basically, he's got both hands, one kind of under, just supporting me, and the other one is positioned so that he can manually stimulate my clitoris.
At the 1 o'clock position.
At the 1 o'clock position.
And it's a pendulum type stimulation. So I actually go into a meditative state because I'm not looking for anything. I'm not looking for any results. I am simply following the exercise. And I'll tell you, that works best. And once T starts twitching.
Well, wait a minute. Just backtrack
a
sec.
Okay.
So the recommendation is that you go into this exercise with no goal in mind.
No goal.
And you set the timer. You literally set a timer for 15 minutes and just do this repetitive motion for 15 minutes. And all I have to do is lie there and enjoy it. And honestly, every time we do it, as soon as we start, I always think this is going nowhere.
Right.
I'm just going to lie here, and when's this going to be over? And then within a couple of minutes, I start getting these contractions and these pulses in my groin. And yesterday when we did it, this time it was really building, so much so that when the timer went off, I said, "Don't stop." It's so relaxing. And anyway, so the timer went off. I said, "Don't stop." And then I had the most explosive orgasm that I've ever had from the 15-minute orgasm, and possibly ever, yesterday. We're really starting to love the 15-minute orgasm.
We are. And I am as hard as rock by this time, because there's an energy that transfers between us that's explosive. And it's excellent foreplay to some really good sex.
Well, I didn't even need more sex after that.
No, but I did.
But you did. But the interesting,
and you got into it.
Yeah, I did.
Absolutely.
But the interesting about it, when I just read about it, I thought that it was really all for the woman. So I kind of felt like it was almost a selfish thing, like, it's all for my pleasure, and you're just going to sit there and go tick-tock, tick-tock like a metronome and be bored. But actually,
no,
you have a pretty good experience
doing
it.
I really enjoy it. I absolutely enjoy it.
Yeah. So that's our lab report on the 15-minute orgasm. Julie, do you have any questions?
I don't have any questions, but I'm already trying to find this book.
It's great.
We've also posted, I think... I linked on an earlier podcast, and I'll link again to it on this one. Cosmopolitan has a blog post or something that outlines the steps for the 15-minute orgasm on their website. So you don't have to buy the book, although the book is kind of interesting.
It is.
But yeah, you have an orgasm that lasts like 10 to 15 minutes.
That is something I would have to try that to believe it at this point.
Yeah.
I believe you. I mean, I don't think you're lying, but now I just really want to try it.
Yeah.
You do have to try.
And you got to kind of practice it.
You do.
Because he recommends that you try it at least six times.
Six times. And was that our third?
That was our fourth.
That's our fourth.
And it really has gotten better every time.
It has gotten better. Yeah.
And it's not like you have an explosive orgasm for 15 minutes. I mean, I don't think personally, I don't even think I could handle that. It's that it's this
built up
kind of, no, it's usually this drawn out sort of pleasurable. I don't know. I've never experienced anything quite like it. It's definitely an orgasm, but it's not, it's one that can actually just be protracted. It's a mild kind of contractions and waves of pleasure is all I can say. So yeah, that's the 15-minute orgasm. Take four. So we've got to practice it two more times. But I mean, we're going to practice it more than two more times.
Mm-hmm. Especially after yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, with the knowledge that you have to practice it six times for it to be awesome, and you're already saying it's awesome, I can only imagine what a couple more times would make it.
We gave it four thumbs up the first time.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, it's just getting better and better. So I really recommend it. It's a great thing for couples to do.
It is.
Yeah. And in fact, just John and Mistress Cindy tried it But I think when they're here, we have to give them a demo because
John
got a cramp. It didn't quite sound as mind-blowing for them as it was for us.
Right. But you really have to follow the directions.
Yeah. So we'll post it on the Blissbringers website. That is the lab. And that's all we have time for today. So thanks for joining us. And you will find links to Julie's info and lots of other good stuff at the blissbringers.com website. You can feel free to leave us a message there by emailing info@blissbringers.com. And you can find us in other ways too, like on Twitter and Facebook, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. All the details are on the blissbringers.com website. The invitation to call in and tell us which team member you wish to be spanked on the show still stands. I recommend just John. He doesn't get spanked nearly enough, considering what a bad boy he is. So you can leave a voicemail on the website, or you can call our number, which is 1-231-622-5477. And until next time, what's your pleasure?
What's your pleasure?
All names mentioned in this show are either fictional, taken from public record, or held by people who have given their explicit consent to be mentioned.